Matt Calder, What Matters in North Carolina. Welcome to the show. Welcome to another episode of the show. Today, we will be talking with Francis DeLuca, president of the Civitas Institute, about a recent article he posted regarding what recourse the legislature has when the governor is seemingly doing things he ought not. I will give you a hint. It involves impeachment, so you're definitely going to want to listen to that segment. Coming up right after we talk about subscribing to the podcast. As you know, every time we do these episodes, I talk about subscribing to the podcast, and it's not just to hear myself talk, it is because it is the easiest way for you to listen to the show. You can get it automatically to your device, whether it's your phone, your tablet, your computer, wherever you listen, whether you're Apple or Android, wherever you listen, however you listen to the show currently. There's an easier way to do it if you're not already subscribed. Now, to do that, go to Apple Podcasts or whatever Android app you use to listen to podcasts, or if you don't have one, you can download it from the App Store. I personally use Podcast Addict. I find it's very easy and simple to use. And you can subscribe to the show by searching What Matters in North Carolina. There you can remove the effort of getting to the show and get to listening to the show faster. Now, that is how you hear from us, but we also want to hear from you. And the way to do that is on social media. All you have to do is search What Matters in C on Facebook and Twitter, and you can get onto our social media, get on that pipeline where you can hear from us in between shows, and also where we can hear from you, because we definitely want to hear from you. We want to hear what you like, what you don't like, what you want us to talk about. We want to know. Now, that is one way we can hear from you, but now there is another way we can hear from you. And to do that, you can actually call into the radio show at 919-747-8063, and you can leave us a message, 1 or 2 minutes, make it clean, but it's what you want to talk about, what you want to rant about. You call the line and just say, I have something to talk about, or I have something to rant about, and go for it. If it's good and if it's clean, we will play it on the air. Again, that number is 919-747-8063. Now, without further ado, we will get to our segment with Francis DeLuca. Joining us now on the phone is Francis DeLuca, president of the Civitas Institute. And how are you doing today, Francis?
Doing good, Matt. Yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm making it through the week. So you want to talk with us today about an article, or I guess we want to talk with you about an article that you've posted on Civitas. And it's a pretty, I don't know about inflammatory being the word, but it's a pretty aggressive stance to take in some ways, isn't it?
Well, let's talk about what it is. And really, it's an article that is about the latest action by Governor Roy Cooper and Attorney General Josh Stein. And to kind of bring the listeners up on the background of it, probably familiar with House Bill 2 and all the uproar around House Bill 2 and everything. And Governor Cooper ran on repealing House Bill 2. So in late last year in 2016, the legislature worked out a compromise with the governor, and they passed a bill, which was House Bill 142, which was a very short bill with about four short sections. That bill repealed House Bill 2. But it also included in it a section, I believe section 2, that was concerned bathroom, shower, changing room facility privacy. And what it said was state facilities would abide by these rules, and also that local, no city or county subdivisions of the state, no entity of the state, which cities and towns are, could make rules in opposition to this, or make laws in opposition to this, which would keep places like Charlotte from doing what they had done that prompted House Bill 2. And what Charlotte did, to remind people, is they not only passed a ordinance that governed city-owned facilities, but they also directed privately owned facilities to comply with the same law. So in other words, they were telling private business, daycares, hospitals, churches, schools, you have to do this. And a lot of this was in opposition to some of the beliefs, also some of the things these organizations thought were for safety. So House Bill 142 passes, the governor immediately signs it. A number of groups on the left sued, specifically the ACLU, the American Civil Liberty Union of North Carolina, sued this bill and said it was because it wouldn't allow local governments to pass ordinances, and that somehow it was discriminatory to lesbians, bisexuals, transgender, gay people. all that. Well, that went to federal court, and the attorney general and was defending the governor, and because the governor was named in the suit, and also the legislature, Senate and House, also intervened in the suit to represent their interest. Well, earlier this week, federal court filing, the governor, in cooperation with these groups that sued him, had come to a settlement. And the settlement, while they had been sued on the entire law, the settlement was over the one section on the privacy. And that actually, that section was due to expire at the end of 2020. So it was going to go away in just a couple years. But the governor, with this settlement, was going to make that section unenforceable immediately. So just to tell people, the governor in North Carolina can veto a bill. So when Roy Cooper signed that bill, he was saying that he agreed with it, and that as governor, he would faithfully execute the law of the state, and this was now a law of the state. By this agreement and settlement, he and Josh Stein, who also swore an oath to defend the laws of the state, are saying that we're not going to defend this one section of this one law. So effectively, it's like a line item veto. And while the governor can veto a whole bill, the governor cannot go into a bill and veto certain sections of it. And some states allow that. We do not allow that in North Carolina. So what he did is exercise a line item veto of this bill with the assistance of left-wing groups and possibly a federal judge. We'll see if the judge agrees to this, because not all of the parties in the suit agreed to it. So we'll see if the judge agrees to it without all the parties agreeing. But if he does, Cooper will have basically done a line item veto. And, you know, he has also in the past taken a number of legislative actions to court and gotten state judges to put injunctions on them. A number of those laws have ended up becoming law over time, but some of them were held up. So, you know, the governor is using the courts to try and do what he can't do politically, and that's veto bills and have it sustained, because the legislature has overridden a number of his vetoes, and a number of those bills overridden have been done with bipartisan majorities. In other words, not only Republicans voted, but Democrats voted. Now, some of them have been straight party line votes, but a number have been with Democrats joining Republicans to override the governor. But now the governor is using the courts to essentially both try and veto bills and have it sustained, but also now actually going in and vetoing a part of a bill. And once a federal judge says this is not to be enforced, that's essentially a veto of that part. How do you stop the governor from doing that? You can't. There's no legal way of doing it short of, and this is what I say in the article that I posted at nccivitas.org. I said, you know, the only foolproof way of stopping him is to impeach him or Stein or both. You know, they won't. They just proven that they're not going to faithfully execute the laws. They're going to figure out a way of getting rid of laws they don't agree with. So how do you stop that? And the only way is impeachment. And people who think impeachment, you have to commit a crime. No, impeachment is a political act. It's saying that, you know, now sometimes you impeach for people actually committing crimes. In this case, I believe that they have violated their oath of office by not faithfully executing the laws of the state. And so, therefore, that's the only ones who can really determine that is the legislature. That was who would determine if they violated their oath of office. And so we'll see what happens. You know, hopefully the judge will not agree to this. You know, this should work its way through the courts. I believe that in the end that law will be upheld by either this court or a higher court. For the governor to do this probably indicates that he thinks that the law will be upheld. So therefore, he's trying to, he and the attorney general are trying to get the outcome they want now. So that's where we are. And what happens next, I'm not really sure. But I do think that the governor has now discovered a way of vetoing parts of bills that he doesn't like, or vetoing whole bills by getting groups to sue him. and then agree, and then settling with them and having a judge go, you know, agree to the settlement.
So essentially, kind of paring down what happened, the governor signed this piece of legislation, which was meant to assuage the issues with HB2, and then went and started negotiating away part of this as a deal. So kind of signed it on one side and then went to the other side in negotiations over this. And he was very public in his criticism of HB2 and all of this issue. So it really kind of, if it had been a bill that he seemed to be really positive of, but he was never positive of this issue. So it always seemed like, I guess for now looking at it, it seems like he said, okay, I'll agree to this, and then immediately went to go and start picking apart what he just agreed to. That's how it kind of comes off to the observer, I would think.
That's right. That I agree with that. Your summation of it, I agree with your summation. I think that's a good way of putting it.
And again, this section three of the bill, I mean, section four says that it expires December 1st, 2020. I mean, we were, a couple years away or 3 years away from this, what was always a temporary ban on local governments enacting ordinances on this type of thing, on public accommodations or regulating it. We were already, you know, a year or so basically into this 4 year moratorium being done.
When he signed the bill, he did express reservations about Section 2, but he still signed the bill. And at the time, and he never said he thought those parts of the law were unconstitutional. He never said that. So if he did, then if he had said that, what he's doing now would actually make some sense. But the reason he didn't say that is because if he had said at the time they passed 1 in 42 that I feel that this section is unconstitutional or, you know, then as both a lawyer and the governor, he should have vetoed the bill.
Right. He shouldn't sign a bill he thinks is unconstitutional, I would assume.
But he just didn't like it. As a matter of politics, he didn't like that section. That's the key. So what he's done is basically do a political act using the courts to effectively line item veto a bill. And in doing that, he also really undermined the compromise he had worked out with the legislature. House Bill 142 was a compromise to get rid of House Bill 2, and it was a compromise of a lot of different parties. And so the governor, in doing this, basically went back on his agreement with the legislature, and he's again using the courts to go back on the agreement and undermining any trust between the legislature and the governor. Not that there was a lot of trust, but now I think you're going to see even less.
Right. I mean, outside of whether or not this is something that he could be impeached for or would be impeached for, this really does hurt any kind of ability for the governor and the legislature to work together. The one thing they have compromised on, it would seem, and since Governor Cooper took office in January, is now being muddied and dirtied and rolled away. I mean, they've overridden 10 of Cooper's 11 vetoes. There's not any kind of it from the outside seeming like a lot of communication going on between them, and HB2 was this issue during the entire campaign, and an issue that Cooper ran on and then said, all right, we're in, and here's the compromise, and it was signed and put away, and now it's being drug up again, and now this one little example of some sort of coming together compromise, and, you know, a true compromise where neither party is totally happy, is now being taken back.
That's right. And not only that, the governor, in bringing this up, also puts to lie his emphasis or his statements talking about we need to get past these divisive social issues and we need to concentrate on, you know, economic development, education, building infrastructure, all these things he talks about. But what's his actions been? His first action was about House Bill 2. Now we see him as North Carolina is economically competing for the Amazon headquarters, he brings up House Bill 2 again and the whole bathroom controversy. He's the one who is provoking this fight, not the legislature.
Right. And why not just let it make its way through the court? I mean, I haven't thought about House Bill 2 or House Bill 142. It hasn't been an issue in the recent weeks and months for me, and I cover this stuff every single day. We talk about this on the radio show every week, you know, the state government issues. And it hasn't been something that I've had to focus on, which means it definitely hasn't been something that the general public has had to focus on. So why are we talking about it again? And the answer is Cooper.
That's right. And I think that kind of sums up where we are on this. And hopefully the legislature can figure out a way to keep the governor from doing this in the future.
I definitely hope that happens. But again, thank you for coming on and talking with us and taking the time.
Well, always. I look forward to talking to you next week, maybe.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
You too.
Well, thank you to Francis for coming on the show. Thank you to you, the listeners. And again, I will say, call in on that line at 919-747-8063 and leave us a message about what you want to talk about or what you want to rant about. Again, that number is 919-747-8063. Also, follow along on social media on Facebook and Twitter at What Matters NC. You can also subscribe to the show by searching What Matters in North Carolina, where you listen to podcasts. And also, if you want to listen to more episodes of the show or more shows on the Freedom Action Network, do so by going to freedomactionnetwork.com. We'll catch you next time.